You tune into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts.
The 13th Amendment has an exception built into it, and that exception is what takes away what would otherwise be a very powerful argument against for-profit prisons, private prisons, and the use of forced labor in the prison system generally of human beings.
December 6, 2025 marks the 10th year anniversary of Abolition Day. To commemorate, I'm sharing this rebroadcast. Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. We're celebrating Abolition Day, December 6th, and the Abolition Amendment, a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution that was published on Abolition Day, December 6th, 2016. And we're very fortunate to be joined by Shell Harrison, who's joining us via Skype. And Shell is an inventor and a law professor, and Shell is the primary author and editor of the Abolition Amendment. Welcome, Shell, and thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Hey, Marlene. So glad to talk to you today. Thanks for having me.
So let's hear about Abolition Day.
Abolition Day was created in 2015 by the Humane Party as a way both to celebrate the ending of human slavery in the U.S., which we call proto-abolition, and then also to promote and look forward to the ending of all slavery here in the U.S. And so we chose the date of December 6th because that was the date on which the 13th Amendment was ratified, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, was ratified, which officially ended the legal institution of slavery throughout the country, human slavery. And 2015 was the 150th anniversary of that date, of the ratification date. So on December 6th of 2015, we go ahead and officially proclaim that as a holiday that the Humane Party was celebrating, and then that we wanted to get also passed at the national, at the federal level.
Well, thank you very much. So what is the Abolition Amendment?
So the Abolition Amendment is a proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It is designed to abolish the property status. It specifically says that it's abolishing the property status of all animals within the jurisdiction of the United States of America. And so the effect of that would be that it puts an immediate end upon ratification of the Abolition Amendment. It will put an immediate end not only to the property status, but to all those industries that depend upon that property status. So, for instance, all the animal killing and animal raping industries, which would include meat, dairy, egg industries, fur, vivisection, leather, and so on. So all exploitation and killing-based industries would be abolished, will be abolished at that time. In terms of what the Abolition Amendment, that's the kind of express terms, and we heard this from Gretchen Ryan in her reading of the Abolition Amendment.
Gretchen Ryan is a vegan activist based in Los Angeles, California. One can hear her reading of the Abolition Amendment, all five sections of it, by visiting vegansradio.com, the archives, in December 2016.
The express terms are about that process of abolishing the institution, meanwhile also providing personhood, so standing, for animals to have their rights asserted in their own name in a court of law, for instance. So those are the kinds of official things that the Abolition Amendment provides. At a more general level, the Abolition Amendment provides what had previously been missing from the animal rights movement in the U.S. I can't speak necessarily to other countries, although this is probably true of other countries as well, but prior to the Abolition Amendment, there was no single unifying goal for the animal rights movement. You just had a sort of fragmentary group of individual communities who were all pursuing a particular piece of legislation. Those things are very important, but they were all just very disparate goals. Whereas with the constitutional amendment, you're talking about what I call apex legislation, the highest piece of legislation that a given legal system provides. And the Constitution is the supreme law of the land here in the U.S. And so by amending the U.S. Constitution itself, we are providing an apex solution that is a comprehensive solution that achieves all those goals that the thousands of individual animal rights and animal welfare and animal liberation activities are driving toward. But prior to the Abolition Amendment, they didn't have that unifying goal. And so now that that is in place, we have a single common goal. So it provides both the specific words of the function of abolition, but then also that unification function. And having that clear goal will, of course, make it much, much easier to actually get the job done. As productivity experts will tell you, if you don't have a goal in mind, then you're not likely to get anything done. So,
thank you very much, Joe. What resources can you recommend for those who'd like to learn more about the Abolition Amendment?
Okay, yeah. So the Abolition Amendment was, of course, written by the Humane Party team through the course of several years and went through several public iterations for public commentary before finally being published in its final form in 2016. And so you can go to the Humane Party website. You can also go to the Humane Herald, which is a publication. Other ways that people can get involved, I would just point out that the Abolition Amendment itself, while produced by a political party, the Abolition Amendment is not a partisan activity. So anyone of any political background, be they a Democrat or Republican, Green or Libertarian, can support the Abolition Amendment. And of course, it would be in pursuit of the values that we all recognize today. It would be the kind of thing that one would want to pursue regardless of one's political affiliation. And I would hope that you would get your party, be that the four parties I just mentioned or some other party, get your party to add the Abolition Amendment and abolition itself to their political party platform so that they too can now oppose slavery in all its forms. So you don't have to be a Humane Party volunteer. You don't have to be any other political affiliation to get involved and start pursuing the goal directly.
What does abolition mean?
Okay, yeah, so that's a good place to start out. My finding has been that bringing in three other words into the discussion of abolition helps to kind of frame what we really mean by abolition, because sometimes words are used kind of interchangeably. But since this is a specific usage of the word abolition, it's kind of nice to have the context of other words. So, and those other words would be emancipation, manumission, and proto-abolition. So first, just starting out with emancipation. Emancipation is a familiar word for many of us, and many of us learned about the word emancipation through Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. That's where we first encountered that word. And as a word, it refers to the emancipating of individuals, generally people who are already in existence. Meanwhile, manumission refers to freeing slaves who are owned, so to speak. I don't like to use the word owned because I don't think that a living being can be owned, but at least in a slavery-based world, manumission refers to the owner of a slave voluntarily giving up their ownership rights. So again, an individual, the slave, is the direct object. So you manumit slaves or manumission of slaves. And then speaking of, that brings up proto-abolition. So proto-abolition is, in the terminology we use today, proto-abolition is the ending of human slavery. So of course we all encounter this through the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment is the amendment to the U.S. Constitution that officially ended the institution of human slavery. And so when we're talking about abolition or proto-abolition, you're not talking about individuals, you're talking about the system or the institution. So unlike emancipation and manumission, which refer to specific individuals, abolition and proto-abolition refer to the system itself. So you abolish slavery, you abolish the institution, or proto-abolition abolish the institution of human slavery. And then that brings us to the word abolition as we use it today. And abolition as we use it today refers to the ending of slavery of all types. So the ending of slavery, period. And that, of course, includes the slavery of animals other than humans.
Thank you, Shell. Can you give us some more information on the context and conceptual background of the Abolition Amendment?
Okay, for sure, yes. Well, the Abolition Amendment represents one of two paths. There's basically two paths to freeing the animals in the United States, and those paths are Path one, through the political process, which is the abolition amendment process. And then path two would be through the judicial branch. So the elected branches of government are path one, and then the judicial branch is path two, basically, to freeing the animals. The judicial branch is inherently reactive. It can only deal with cases that are brought before it, cases and controversies, requirement. And so to the degree that we could achieve the ending of animal slavery, ending of all slavery in this country through the judicial branch, it would be through some interpretation of the Constitution. While that would be wonderful, and I will certainly take animal liberation however we can get it, a problem with going through the reactive branch of government there is that they can't proactively write out other sections and write out a system for how to get things done. Whereas if you go through the abolition amendment, if you go through the political process, you can have not only the ending of slavery, but you can have the other sections, for instance, of the abolition amendment that provide a personhood system whereby rights of animals can be enforced through a court of law and provide particular definitions, you know, explicit definitions of sentient beings and that kind of thing.
Thank you. What is needed to pass the abolition amendment?
At the national level, Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution provides a process. It goes through the legislature and then goes to the states. We've actually got a graphic specifically on the numbers needed to pass the abolition amendment. So if you're an animal rights activist, if you are anti-slavery generally, if you are for liberty and freedom and other concepts that we hold dear, then here are the exact numbers that you would need to know in order to end slavery forever in the United States of America. Here they go. Two-thirds of the House of Representatives, so that's 290 Congress members. Two-thirds of the U.S. Senate, so 67 senators. And then three-fourths of the states. So since we have 50 states currently, that comes out to being 38 states. So 290 in the House, 67 in the Senate, 38 states to ratify. And at that point, if we can hit those numbers for the abolition amendment, and when we do hit those numbers, the animals in this country will be free. We will be able to say that the United States of America no longer allows slavery in any form, and slavery of any sentient being. And what a wonderful day that will be. It will be the first time in history that a nation has achieved such a landmark change. And so I look forward to that day. I certainly hope and believe that that day will come during the lifetime of those of us alive right now. I think it's totally possible for us to do it, and those are the exact numbers we need to make that happen.
Thank you, Shell. We're listening to Shell Harrison, a law professor and the primary author and editor of the Abolition Amendment, a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution. You tune into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Shell Harrison. This is the Deer Song. That's D-E-E-R. The Deer Song by Will Tuttle. From the break. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena Massachusetts. We're joined by Shell Harrison, the primary author and editor of the Abolition Amendment. He's also a law professor. Shell, thank you for all this information. Very, very important and very helpful. Thank you. I have another question about the Abolition Amendment. Does this refer to the rights of sentient individuals outside of industry as well? So, for example, on my way commuting today, I passed a buck and three does, all dead, being placed into the back of a truck. As you know, it's hunting season. Yeah, so how does that fit in with the Abolition Amendment?
Yes, so murdering someone is just murdering someone, and if that someone happens to not be a person, that still would be murdering them. The Abolition Amendment is not limited to simply freeing those who were already in slavery. Rather, it grants personhood to any sentient being. The definition of the protected class is in the Abolition Amendment itself. And so certainly if an animal is already free, if they're out there in the woods doing their thing, running around, being a deer, you know, having their own family relations, having kids and, you know, taking care of those kids and looking for food and running around and playing when it's a sunny, happy day. If they're out there pursuing their lives, which are just as valuable to them as our lives are to us, if they're out there living their life, then they cannot be enslaved. So, you know, not only would the Abolition Amendment and does the Abolition Amendment free those who are in slavery, but of course it says that you can't go out and then enslave those who are already free. That would just be the effect of ending the institution of slavery. So it certainly impacts the rights of all animals, whether they are currently in captivity or currently free.
So my next question is, what is the relationship of the Abolition Amendment to the rest of the animal rights and animal protection movement?
Okay, great question. So the Abolition Amendment serves a unifying function because since it's a comprehensive solution that will end everything from meat and dairy to horse racing and horse carriages and leather and all the vivisection, animal torture and supposed medical labs, all of those things are ended through this one constitutional amendment. And so it does serve that unification function. It does not eliminate the need for these other victories along the way. We're not going to simply wake up one day and pass the Abolition Amendment without any groundwork being laid. So the relationship of the Abolition Amendment to other pursuits, be they a local pursuit of ending horse carriages. Horse carriages are a big deal during the holidays because people associate these Christmas songs like Sleigh Ride or whatever, Jingle Bells and so on, with horse-drawn carriages, and so they tend to rear their heads here during the holiday season. Well, ending that one industry, even at the local level, moves resources away from animal exploitation and into some other legitimate form of entertainment. And as we move resources away from animal slavery and into legitimate forms of entertainment, legitimate forms of food, and so on, as the resources shift, you are setting up through these initial battles and through these intermediate battles, you're setting up the financial and economic conditions and political conditions for the decisive battle that comes later. So do we need to fight all those thousands and tens of thousands of individual battles along the way that animal rights and animal welfare and direct action activists are engaged in today? And the answer is certainly yes. Those are all part of laying the groundwork for the decisive victory.
Thank you very much, Shell. What other things need to be done in conjunction with the Abolition Amendment and after the Abolition Amendment is passed?
Okay, yeah, so great kind of segue out of that last question. So done in conjunction with, well, of course, as I was just mentioning, we have to win those intermediate battles that set up the decisive battles and change the conditions so that the decisive battle can go our way, the economic, financial, and political conditions. Along the way, these things would include not only the state and local initiatives, but also things that have been produced in particular by the Humane Party, for instance, like the Borders Act, which is an act that will end the exchange across international boundaries and across state boundaries and the exchange of slaves. This is the equivalent of the 1808 Act that ended the human slave trade. So the equivalent that we would have today is the ending of, for instance, live export, which again, that moves resources away from, moves financial incentives and profit motive away from slavery and abuse and killing and raping of sentient beings and into legitimate activities. And so, again, it sets up those financial and economic conditions. Meanwhile, so those are the kind of things that would need to be done in conjunction with the Abolition Amendment while we're in the process of getting there. Meanwhile, after the Abolition Amendment has been passed, that really is not the end of the story. While it is the ultimate goal that we have at this point, once that is passed, then you have to enforce the Abolition Amendment. And this is, of course, true also was true of the proto-abolition movement and the 13th Amendment. once the 13th Amendment was ratified and became law, such that the abolition, such that human slavery had been abolished in this country. Nonetheless, it took years and decades and over a century, and to a degree is still going on today, to enforce the rights that were given to human beings once the institution of human slavery was ended. So, for instance, you had the following year, you had the 1866 Civil Rights Act. Then you had the 14th Amendment, 1867, then the 15th Amendment in 1870. So once a decisive victory has been achieved, you then have to enforce and administer that victory. And so the Abolition Amendment, while it is the kind of turning point, it will ever after still be an ongoing matter of enforcing the rights of animals, other animals, once they have them.
Thank you, Shell. We're listening to Shell Harrison, the primary author and editor of The Abolition Amendment. Thank you for tuning in to Vegan Nation. Now we'll have a little musical interlude. This is a short snippet of a song by Daisy Diva, Jason Oliver. Operation Jingle.
Animals, animals, people now believe that you should be protected from all harm and cruelty. Hey, animals, animals, soon you will be free once we make Berkeley a compassionate city. Marching down the streets through the Berkeley Hills we go, eating rice and beans and vegan mayo, singing songs of peace and liberation. What fun it is to live the life of an ethical vegan. Hey, animals, animals, people now believe that you should be protected from all harm and cruelty. Hey, animals, animals, soon you will be free.
Can the Abolition Amendment be passed at the state level and the national level?
Yes. Yes, it can. It was written... The text that we published in final form in 2016 was written at the national level. However, all a given state has to do is substitute United States in the text and put the name of their state, so Virginia or California or whatever it may be, in the Abolition Amendment and go ahead and pass it. And in fact, that is something that we encourage and hope that individual states we'll pursue that. This is what's exactly what is going on right now with respect to the first section and one part of the first section of the Abolition Amendment even now. So the 13th Amendment included an exception to the prohibition of human slavery in the cases of punishment for a crime. Without that exception, there'd be a huge argument that for-profit prisons and the use of prison labor and so on, private prisons, that those are violative of the rule against slavery. But again, because of this exception in the 13th Amendment, that argument is not readily available. So you'll notice that in the Abolition Amendment, that exception for slavery and involuntary servitude as a form of punishment or as part of one's punishment is no longer there. So in other words, humans and human rights activists and people who oppose the for-profit prison system and so on have a separate or a related but a also distinct reason to support the Abolition Amendment, because it gets rid of that exception.
So it benefits not only other animals but also benefits humans by getting rid of this exception that was in the 13th Amendment for human slavery.
Well, that part of the Abolition Amendment has been picked up by various organizations around the country since you and I last spoke about this. And in November of 2022, four states went ahead and removed that exception from their state constitutions. So that's a really good example of at least a fragment of the Abolition Amendment, certainly not the whole thing and certainly none of the parts that deal with other animals, but at least a small fragment of the Abolition Amendment has already been passed now at the state level. So we encourage people to do that. Of course, we want the whole Abolition Amendment to be passed at the state level, not just a fragment of the first section and not just those parts limited to humans, but to all animals. Nonetheless, that's a good start, and we encourage everyone to pursue it at the state level while also pursuing it at the national level.
Thank you, Shell. How does the Abolition Amendment relate to international relations, and can other countries pass the Abolition Amendment?
Certainly, other countries can do whatever is the equivalent process for amending for apex legislation in their given jurisdiction. Now, of course, the American legal system is particular to this country, And every other country will have their own constitution or their own way of passing the equivalent form of the Abolition Amendment. But other countries can certainly do that, and we would encourage them to do so. Also, the Humane Party materials, including the Abolition Amendment, but everything else, are freely available for anyone in any country to download, copy, translate. The Abolition Amendment has been translated into several different languages already, but you can certainly download that, translate it into your language of choice, and then pursue that legislation in any other country, in any other jurisdiction, and certainly we would encourage people to do so.
Thank you, Shel. Thank you very much. And we're coming to a close in the interview for today. Are there any other additional messages that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
The U.S. still has the same system that it had in the 1850s and 1860s with respect to the House of Representatives and the Senate and so on. And if the Abolition Amendment is passed at the state level, then we eventually get into a situation where, if we had 50 states, where there would be 25 states where slavery is now abolished and 25 states where slavery is still possible. And so animal killing industries will retreat to those states where slavery is still legal, which sets up exactly the same conditions that gave rise to the U.S. Civil War. So we all know how bad that was. I think we should try to avoid that scenario. Yes, getting it done at the state level is important, but ultimately we need to get it done at the national level, and let's please do it in a way that doesn't result in all that incredible trauma and suffering that the Proto-Abolition Amendment, the 13th Amendment, and that movement had to go through. Starting at the personal level, the things to do would be to, of course, go vegan so that you're not participating in the killing of others, and you're not providing financial support to animal killers and animal rapists. So, you know, stopping the financial support is, of course, a crucial thing that an individual can do at the individual level. Also, of course, it's crucial that individuals use their vote. So going vegan, not only in your daily life and with respect to the activities that you engage in, so your food, also your entertainment and so on, but using your vote.
Thank you very much, Shel.
Thank you, Marlene. I'm so glad to talk to you as always, and I'm so grateful for your show. You just have such luminaries. I love listening to it, and I'm just honored and thrilled to get to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for all you do. Okay, we've been joined by Shel Harrison. You can hear Shel's previous interviews by going to the archives at vegansradio.com, December 2016. There's a part one and a part two interview where he explains in detail each section, all five sections of the Abolition Amendment.
If you're an animal rights activist, if you are anti-slavery generally, if you are for liberty and freedom and other concepts that we hold dear in order to end slavery forever in the United States of America.
Listening to Shelley Harrison, the primary author and editor of the Abolition Amendment. I would like to extend my gratitude to Shelley for joining us on Vegan Nation, and to all our listeners for tuning in, and to Will Tuttle for his music. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. Please join us again next week at the same time. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. Let's go out with the deer song. This is Marlene wishing you a good day. Thanks also to Daisy Diva, Jason Oliver, for his song, Liberation Jingle.
Animals, animals, people now believe that you should be protected from harm and cruelty. Hey!